live from the Richard Harris Law Firm studios and streaming at lvsportsnetwork.com.
In transition, here's Watt. Watt, stick check, drops it off. Hannafin scores!
This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, your source for exclusive interviews, access with the team, breaking news, and in-depth analysis.
Pearson centered, they score! Brett Howden, a hero again!
Here are your hosts, Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
We are sweep free in the Stanley Cup playoffs into the third round of the postseason, and the Stanley Cup final is the only opportunity left to have a four-game series in this 2025 postseason. That's cool. Just to think about that, how competitive it's been. But we're on the verge of a very efficient round, the most efficient round of the three, with both the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers leading their respective conference finals 3-1. Florida has a second opportunity in the Eastern Conference Final to advance tonight, as they can eliminate the Carolina Hurricanes. It would be three straight Stanley Cup finals for the Florida Panthers if they can come up with the victory on the road. And tomorrow, Dallas Stars will attempt to stave off elimination as they have fallen behind 3-1 against the Edmonton Oilers. Darren Millard with you. Ryan Wallace is on assignment tonight. We are broadcasting from the Richard Harris studio. We have really enjoyed our partnership there. They have made billions for their clients over the years, so check them out. Fun stuff coming up through the course of today. We will get into one-timers, news, notes from around the National Hockey League, a few different things coming up. There's some injuries that are going to affect the Stanley Cup final. We know that on both sides of the NHL's conference divide. We'll get into the Oilers' side of it and what they will have to navigate and who they will have to play without coming up on one-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. We'll also get into a couple of things regarding injuries from teams that are already out, but stuff that's going to affect clubs in the Western Conference going forward and may give the Vegas Golden Knights an opportunity to take advantage of some early season encounters. The NHL schedule, by the way, will be released early summer. So what we have going forward, just to, so you know, the schedule is the Stanley Cup final and the presentation, and that can take us into late June. Then you have the draft, which is going to be a virtual draft this year. First time the National Hockey League has ever done this. It's the 27th and the 28th, but each team will be in its own host location, remotely drafting. But the prospects are invited to attend an opportunity to walk on the stage and receive their jersey from Commissioner Gary Bettman or Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly. That location is in downtown Los Angeles. So teams will be remote. The prospects will be in person. That's on the 27th and the 28th. Vegas Golden Knights content team will be on the ground. Looking forward to that. Love working the National Hockey League draft. So be with Indy Shea and, of course, Gordon Weigers from the social media department. We'll be all over that, bringing you all the interviews of the Golden Knights picks. That's on the 27th and 28th. And then you've got free agency on July 1st, and that's the first opportunity to dive into contracts for next year, those that are available. Certainly restricted free agents have a tighter limit on what their opportunities are, and the Vegas Golden Knights have both, five unrestricted free agents and a couple of restricted guys. And you can also sign contracts if you have 1 year left. So if you have one season remaining on your deal, you can sign an extension as of July 1st. And falling under that window is Jack Eichel. So it is going to be a fun, interesting few days from the draft in Los Angeles, where things crank back up for the Vegas Golden Knights. And then you no first-round pick, but they have several selections this year. going into it, five picks overall. And then you have free agency and July 1st with both the opportunity to deal with your own players that that are up, look at the open market, and then the likes of Jack Eichel. And then you get the schedule. And I'm talking about players because there's a couple of guys who we've learned are going to have surgery around the National Hockey League, and it's going to bleed into next year, their availability. And the Golden Knights, if they get a chance to play one of these teams early on, might be able to jump on that and be able to seize the opportunity. The schedule will come out in early July-ish. In and around there. And that's always a fun date on the calendar where we can all look through, okay, when's the New York trip? Usually right around the bye week for the Vegas Golden Knights, the Florida trip because of what Tampa and the Panthers are right now and how that works into things. Last year it was really early. In the season, remember, it was the first road trip for the Vegas Golden Knights when they went through the likes of the Panthers and the Lightning, and then you get your rivalry games, and we'll be certainly looking forward to where and when the games against the Edmonton Oilers line up because of what happened in this year's playoffs. Who are you looking forward to the most? Send us a text, 702-876-1340. It's not in the front burner right now, but when the schedule does come out, what team do you look at, or what area do you look at the most for the Vegas Golden Knights? Is it the opportunity to see Connor McDavid at T-Mobile Arena? Is it where the New York road trip comes up, or the Canadian road trip out east when you get to play like Toronto and Montreal, or whether it's Toronto and Montreal at home? I'd love to get your idea of opponents, chance to watch the likes of Dustin Wolf, great goaltender with Calgary Flames. Love watching him. So what attracts you? What are you looking forward to when the Vegas Golden Knights schedule is released for 2025-2026? And that is season 9. Can you believe that? Chapman, just thought of that. It's season 9 that we're talking about with the schedule coming up. So we're really working our way towards a significant moment in the history of the Vegas Golden Knights. And Cup and six, we heard that. I know Bill would like a couple more before he gets to season 10, and there's still that possibility. But 10 and 25 are moments on the calendar when it comes to a franchise's evolution and just place in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, we've seen. I know teams in the past, they put a cool little patch on their jersey for significant anniversaries. I remember the Buffalo Sabres for their 50th anniversary had a very cool patch on their jersey. I'm trying to think, was it who? I think I saw Nashville's for their 25th anniversary. Have they? They haven't been around 25 years, have they?
Several teams just went through 25.
Yeah, I remember seeing
Minnesota
one of their patches.
Nashville, right?
I think you're right. Yeah. I remember seeing one of their patches, and it was pretty cool. So like I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure the people who designed that stuff for VGK will do a pretty awesome job of designing anniversary patches. As far as the schedule, the first thing, it's funny because being a Northeast guy, the first thing I always do is look to see when they do that New York road trip, and when the Devils come to Vegas. Those are the two things that jump out at me the most. But then I think I'm a bit like fans, because I look to see which superstar players are coming to the Fortress and when they're coming. Obviously, I want to see guys like Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid. But the one we didn't get to see last year, and I won't use the term superstar, at least not yet, but we didn't get to see Macklin Celebrini when the San Jose Sharks made their one and only trip to T-Mobile Arena last year, because I believe he was injured in early October or I guess late October.
Well, he wasn't a healthy scratch, I can tell you that.
Yeah, yeah, not on that team. But we didn't get to see him when the Sharks came here in October. So that's one I think for this year I'll be circling. And a couple texts. Joey Zamboni says the Red Wings, of course. He's a big Detroit guy. And John says a rematch of the Stanley Cup Final for part two.
What does that mean?
I don't know if that means Washington or if that means Florida.
That's got to mean Florida.
I would think
just Washington
so.
Feels too far back.
Far removed, yeah.
Anybody, Nick Kiprios, we were talking one night, and he was talking about Dallas and New Jersey. We had national games, so for some reason we were doing a Dallas-New Jersey game.
That's a random one.
Yeah, it's especially for Canadian television. And he's like, well, it's Stanley Cup rematch. And Ray Ferraro and I were working the game with Kipper, and we both looked at him and went, rematch? And this is like 14 years later. Like, can it be a rematch 13 years later? And we beat him down. Kipper, by the way, was on 100% Hockey Today talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs and their situation. Some strong comments regarding that. You mentioned Auston Matthews. So when Toronto comes to town, just hold off on that and see where Auston Matthews is playing next year.
Oh.
Before you look forward to just Toronto and Auston Matthews coming together. There's some speculation out there that Toronto, with Marner and Tavares both being up, might just make big changes and cash in while the market's hot with Auston Matthews and bring in multiple pieces instead of one player being able to carry so much your way. I'd be shocked that they would do it, trading their captain and... just came off his first year as the captain and everything he has done. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm on the other side of that. I don't think it will take place, but there's certainly some speculation out there. Who are your top three, either teams or players? Give me your top three that you look forward to seeing at T-Mobile when the schedule comes out.
Well, I think...
And I like Joey's talking about the Red Wings. They're always fun to watch. They travel well. Respectful crowd.
Yeah, it's an original six franchise. Yeah. I think
so.
Anytime.
I don't know whether that's in your top three or not, but give me your three, and it could be individual or it could be franchises.
Ooh, I tend to shy away from West Conference teams because we see them quite a bit, but I do like when the Panthers come here, just because. As you mentioned yesterday, they have a bunch of superstar players, guys who are going to be in the Hall of Fame. I like when the Penguins come because you get to watch Sid, who for a generation was the best player in the NHL, and you know, when it's all said and done, will be a first ballot, probably, I don't know if a unanimous Hall of Famer, but, I mean, he should be. And like I said, I like watching...
Were you talking about Sid?
Sid, yeah.
Oh, and you said you don't know whether he's a unanimous Hall of Famer?
Well, I don't know if there's these goofballs in hockey like there are in baseball who won't vote for a guy because, oh, he can't be unanimous like that.
No, I don't think that exists in hockey.
It's a good thing because it's stupid. But I like when Pittsburgh comes here because I think Sid is great for the game, and he's an incredible player still at this stage of his career. And like I said, Auston Matthews, I like when he comes here because – I like to watch great American players, and obviously being an American, he's one of the guys who stands out to me.
So who's your third? You got the Panthers, you got the Penguins.
And Toronto.
Okay, Toronto.
Well, assuming
Let's go Matthews.
Yeah, Matthews would be there.
Just to be safe.
What about you?
Yeah, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are always top of my list. To be able to do those games on television and be able to tell stories and formulate an approach to both highlight those players. Because we do focus 75% of our telecast on the Golden Knights. But McDavid and Draisaitl will come in on the pregame and the intermissions. That's a significant factor. So always is when those two are rolling through. Edmonton is number one. Also, just to have a fascination and love for the history of the Montreal Canadiens, it's special when Montreal comes into T-Mobile Arena or anywhere. But I look for when Vegas is in Montreal and when Montreal is in Las Vegas. That's the historical side, the traditionalist in me with that. And I also enjoy or anticipate Sidney Crosby, because I also like just bumping into him and saying hi, and he's just such a cool guy. So whenever Pittsburgh does come in, I make it part of my routine to travel around the room or be in that area just so I can say hi and touch base with Sid the Kid. So a little bit of history. And it's funny, Ovi would have been like number one last year on that list because of the chase. And now that he's done it, it's going to be cool to watch Ovi. It's just not going to have the same feeling. And that doesn't mean that he's any less of a player or that he's any less enjoyable to watch. It just doesn't have the same significance. And when it does get time, when he's going to score 1,000 goals, that will emerge as a big story out there. So I've got a little bit of a mix, one Western Conference team, and then the history of the Habs and greatness of Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, I think anytime an Original Six team comes to Vegas, it's special, only because of the history of you think about the teams like the Rangers and obviously Montreal and Boston. I'm always a fan of that. But yeah, this year Ovi probably would have been on the list, and we got to see him score a hat trick at T-Mobile, which kind of added to the special night of him on that chase. And then was it the next night he had two goals, and then he got injured,
broke his leg.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have told me at that point that he was going to break the record, I would have said I'll take that bet every day, and shows what an incredible competitor the guy is to put the broken leg behind him and still break that incredible scoring record.
So his year is going to be interesting, because I was reading a report yesterday from the IOC, International Olympic Committee, and there is some misinformation, or it was being spun in a way that the IOC wasn't pleased. The Russian Ice Hockey Federation met with the International Ice Hockey Federation at the recent World Championships. Russia wasn't playing. They're prohibited because of the conflict in Ukraine. But out of that, a lot of people got the opinion that Russia was going to be back in the Olympic Games. And the IOC took the stand where they will, for Milan Cortina next year. And this affects Team USA, this affects Team Canada, everybody. IOC is taking the stance where they will allow some Russian individual athletes to participate. So if you're a figure skater, you're biathlon, some of that, you have to apply and you have to go through a vetting process. Only then will they, if you clear all the hurdles, be allowed to participate. And there was very few in the recent summer games from Russia. You can't compete under the Russian flag, and you can't play under the Russian anthem. You are an independent athlete, for lack of a better term. Team sports, Russia is still banned. As of right now, Russia is still prohibited from participating in the Olympic Winter Games. And that would take a few of the players, and think about this from our own Vegas Golden Knights with Pavel Dorofeev or Ivan Barbashev, takes those players out of the mix for competing. Now, that can change, and there's certainly been signs of movement on that front, but from the report that I read the other day, IOC, as of right now, is standing firm that that Russian teams won't be allowed in the Olympic Games.
Now, how would that work? Because there's a qualification tournament. Obviously, you know, teams like Denmark were able to get in through qualification. I think Switzerland as well. So would they just create a provisional spot for them in a hypothetical world where Russia is allowed to compete? Because I can't think, I can't imagine you're going to take a team out. That's not right. That kind of goes against the competitive nature of the games. If you tell Denmark, hey, you guys qualified, but guess what? We're going to replace you with Russia. I can't imagine that would sit well, especially in the EU. But I don't know. It's an interesting discussion to have. I mean, listen, I want to see best on best. And I was disappointed that we didn't get the opportunity. And I understand why. But disappointed we didn't get to see Russia in the face-off over the winter break there. But it'd be kind of cool, all politics aside, to see Ovechkin and those incredible goalies that they have competing against the best in the world in the Olympics.
Yeah, again, as of right now, the Russian ice hockey team would not be, I guess I'd write Russian ice hockey team, because that's what it's called in the Olympics. It does drive me up the wall when people refer to our game as ice hockey. It's hockey, and field hockey is field hockey. So just call it that. But in international circles, at the Olympics, it is ice hockey. So at this point, Russia is not included in the plans, and we'll see where that goes. There's a simple solution here. It won't get political, but there's a simple solution to make that happen. And remember that invasion or war, that conflict, started right after the previous Winter Games ended. And there's no real – and Russia won that game, that gold medal in hockey. I don't think it was fluke timing. That conflict waited until after the Olympic Games, but that's as deep as I'll get into my opinion on that. You called it the face-off. Now, we will have the World Cup coming up, the Four Nations face-off, which occurred with Canada, Sweden, Finland, and Team USA in February this year, was a one-off. The trophy, everything, like it's its own separate entity. But it was one of the more awkward titles that I've ever stumbled across, not stumbled across, but that's entered my sphere. And I'm glad that it's going that we'll have a World Cup from now on, because I've heard everything from the Four Nations to the Four Nations tournament. Today, you offered up the face-off, which was a new one.
Well, that was
for me. But there's so many different iterations of it that people have come up with, because it's not one of those tournament titles that just rolled off the tip of the tongue.
Yeah, and I did that specifically because if Russia had been allowed to participate, it would not have been the Four Nations face-off. It would have been, I guess, the Five Nations, and maybe you throw a rest of the world and make it a six.
Well, it would have been a World Cup.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that too.
That's what it would have been. But it's very difficult to squeeze one team in. And the other part of that is it's NHL players only. At a time where other countries don't necessarily have enough players, like Denmark couldn't participate in a Four Nations face-off type event.
No, but I think
mid-season, because you don't have enough NHL players. But and that's why you're limited to the number of teams.
You could take, you know, a guy like Matt Zuccarello, who clearly Norway does not have enough players either, but put him with some of the German players and the Swiss players.
No, no. They did that in 2018 or 2016 and at the World Cup with the international team. They made it to the final because they put a bunch of nations
together.
They have great players. No. And it was a great story.
Well, you could have
it was the extras. It was the guys that didn't have enough players, and it was cool. And they did have some stars in it. But no, I don't want, like, if you're gonna have an international tournament, play under your flag.
Okay, well then you.
And if you don't have enough players, you can't play. And if it's NHL only, and you don't have enough players, you can't play.
That's
really simple.
That's fair.
Yeah. I don't know why you're trying to squeeze in everybody gets a participation ribbon.
Listen, Czechia could compete. There's no reason why they couldn't have.
Yes, no, they could have. Slovakia could have. But Finland, remember at the Four Nations tournament, like they had 9 defensemen in the National Hockey League. 9. That's what they had to choose from.
That's tough.
They used 8 because of injuries, made some guys available. They went 8 deep. And that's Finland. And they are a very strong team on the global scene. So it's tough for teams to come up with a roster. Never mind be competitive in the middle of the season if you're restricted to NHLers. So let's take a break. We'll get into what's going to happen tonight between Florida and Carolina, plus Ashley Watkins will join us for the Legal Minute on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Eastern Conference Final is potentially ending tonight. So we have a trophy in the building. The first trophy presentation could take place this evening at Lenovo Center in Carolina, where the Florida Panthers lead the Carolina Hurricanes 3-1 in the East Final. Carolina trying to become the 6th team in NHL history to force a Game 6 in a conference final after losing the first 3 games. The Dallas Stars did it in 2023. The 2008 Dallas Stars accomplished it. In 1980, Buffalo, 75 Islanders, and 1939 New York Rangers. I don't believe Chapman or I would have much on that New York Ranger squad. So it's a difficult task to come all the way back from a 3-0 deficit. But a team's only forced a 6th game on a handful of occasions. That's how much of a hole the Carolina Hurricanes are in right now. It's only happened a half dozen times. Now, I do think that there's some confidence to be gained from just winning a contest in the 3rd round, which Carolina had not done since going all the way and winning the Stanley Cup in 2006. Is that the magic potion to unburden them and allow them to play their game like Connor Hellebuck, who was much better when he got to the 2nd round than he was in the opening series against the St. Louis Blues? I think that there's some merit there, but remember, Florida was missing 3 guys in Game 4 because of injury. They're going to have, by all accounts, those 3 players back in the lineup tonight, which is going to make a huge difference. I don't have confirmation of this yet. Rosters haven't been released, but Sam Reinhart, AJ Greer, and Nico Mikkola are expected to play tonight. Mikkola's been awesome in the back end, and Reinhart's just a pure goal scorer and a finisher. And when you're coming off a game in which you were unable to break through and score a goal. Those two players, no offense to AJ Gert, are going to have an impact and allow you to be a little more competitive. And I wonder, it's strange to say this, but is because they're trailing 3-1, but is there any type of letdown from Carolina that, oh, we finally won a game here? Because they've got to be even better. The same game they played in game four is not going to be good enough tonight to survive. With the additions of the Florida Panthers, players coming back into the lineup, Carolina has to be even better than a near-perfect performance in game four, which was their best by far in the series. Take into account, and this is why I'm leaning towards Florida. I should say this, position it this way. I'm hopeful that Carolina wins because I want another hockey game. And I love the intrigue and the drama and the theatrical element of a team coming back from three games down in a best of seven series and making things tense. So I'm hopeful that Carolina can extend this series tonight. Why I don't believe it's going to happen is the players that are coming back in for Florida and the Panthers on the road have been dynamite in this postseason. They destroyed Carolina at Lenovo Center in the first two games of this series. Like, it was not even close. And when you factor in that they outscored Carolina 10-2 in their building to open the series, 5-2 and 5-0 wins. The Panthers have won four in a row on the road, 7-2 overall away from home in the postseason, and they've clinched both series on the road. Their first round series against Tampa Bay and their second round set in game seven against the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're not intimidated at all. They don't change their game at all. And the Carolina Hurricanes have to raise their performance even more than what was arguably a perfect effort in game four. Given how far they've come, can you go even better than that? That's a big ask right now for a team that has had trouble playing up to its identity in this series. And they have to be able to get a lead and be able to be more intense throughout the game. Smart intense, but they have to get back to rolling it over. And they're big guys. They were better in game four. They were not productive. It was a 1-0 game. So they didn't get one of these beautiful, wonderful performances that lead you to believe that they're back. Or even in Dallas, they've got goals from Jason Robertson in back-to-back games. That's encouraging, knowing that there's a little bit coming there. Even though they're in the same situation, they're down 3-1. I like that narrative a lot more than Carolina squeaking by in a 1-0 game. And just Florida has got this beautiful swagger. And Kipper was on 100% hockey, and he put it in a way that I hadn't thought of yet. And this is a team in Florida that is in a four-year run of dominance. They won a President's Trophy 3 years ago, lost in the first round, but won a President's Trophy. Went to the Stanley Cup Final a couple of years ago, dropped the championship series to the Golden Knights. Got back to the Stanley Cup Final last year and avoided the ultimate collapse by winning in Game 7 at home and they're a game away, a victory away from winning their third straight Prince of Wales Trophy as champion of the Eastern Conference. Kipper said they're very close to being a team that we'll talk about for 50 years as one of those great teams. And Montreal in the late 70s, the Islanders in the early 80s, the Edmonton Oilers in the 80s, 90s. Those are special runs. And Florida is right in the midst of that. Maybe you don't remember or weren't following hockey in the late 70s, but you know about that group that played for the Montreal Canadiens with that brilliant, every defenseman was a Hall of Famer, and LaFleur and Cornwallier and the incredible depth of Scotty Bowman behind the bench. The Islanders, you know all about them because they had such little turnover on that team with Bossy and Trotsky and Gillies and Potvin and Billy Smith, Al Arbour behind the bench. You know them. And the Oilers, we know them in Messier and Gretzky and Curry and Coffey, Grant Fuhr and Annie Moog. We know all those players. Are Sam Bennett and Matthew Tkachuk and Sergei Bobrovsky about to enter that same area of excellence and legendary status? If they get back and they're able to achieve the ultimate goal again this year, that's better than Pittsburgh, who won back-to-back. That's better than Chicago, who won 3-6. It's the best performance, most dominating performance that we've seen since Oilers, Islanders, and Montreal Canadiens. It's that close to doing something really special, and they're getting healthier tonight against the Carolina team that had to play to perfection just to squeak by and win in Game 4. Can they be even better tonight? That's a big, big ask. I hope it happens because I love the theater and the drama of being the seventh team to ever drop the first three games and force a game six. I love that idea. I just don't think it's in the cards. Not down 3-0. I thought Carolina would be, for this series to go six at the start, that was a no-brainer. I hope it goes six now, but for Carolina to win the way it started, it's not going to happen. Ashley Watkins, the Legal Minute's coming up, and then we'll set up hour number two on the VGK Insider Show. Some injury talk that's going to affect teams in the Western Conference. So we'll bring you up to date on that on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
It's time for the Legal Minute. Brought to you by Sam and Ash Injury Law.
I was over in the neighborhood of Sam and Ash, their headquarters in the Arts District the other day. It was a big weekend for the Millards because our oldest daughter graduated, and we took her shopping and over to Buffalo Exchange, just a funky area of town, and had a cool thing. And I thought, it was Saturday because they weren't going to be there. But I was thinking about you, Ashley, and how great you guys are, and I'd love to be able to pop over. And it just didn't work. But you sent a great note because my daughter took her emotional support dog up and received her diploma with Oreo, and he wore the cap and gown, and it was just one of those cool moments. And I love seeing Rocky do his thing all the time as well.
Oh, I bet Oreo brings more to the table than Rocky does any day. So, but congratulations.
We saw Lilo and Stitch last night because that's Oreo and that's that's Zero, our daughter. And it's funny seeing the personality come out. What give us an idea of Rocky's personality? Where does Rocky fit into the scale?
Oh, this is funny. To keep it Disney, I was just telling someone Rocky is like if Timon and Pumbaa from The Lion King were one animal. That is him. He's sassy, feisty, but then when he's trotting around, he kind of looks like that warthog. So really fun, really fun times.
Nah, that's good. We lean on you for different legal experiences that we see in the sports world, and this one has been going on for a while, and just a terrible situation in the British Hockey League. Matt Pretgrave avoids criminal charges after the death of ex-NHL player Adam Johnson. That's when the skate of Matt collided with Adam Johnson. Total fluke play, just a freak accident. But it took a while for the authorities to rule that Pretgrave was going to avoid criminal charges. Any legal reason why it took that much, considering it was a freak accident?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of, I mean, you see this now a lot with social media, the press. There's a lot of energy that gets behind these high-profile stories, especially when you have a situation like this. And I think there was a lot of energy behind it that tried to say it was so unreasonable that it had to have been somewhat intentional, or it was such a reckless play, not just intentional, that it was borderline criminal with how reckless it was. All hockey players know this. It's like, it's beyond any reasonable behavior to have put your skate in that position. So I think the authorities did what they needed to do, and they took their time, they investigated it, they talked to everyone, and they went through the evidence and ultimately reached a decision as to whether or not the prosecutors ultimately make the decision of whether or not charges will be pursued. The officers, they just do their investigation and their reporting, and then it's up to the attorneys to look through it and go, does this violate any criminal statute or criminal code? And if so, is this something we're going to pursue? And here they didn't do it.
It does remind you of how deadly a skate blade can be through the course of playing, and it's why kicking is one of the most punishable offenses in the sport. But from a personal injury perspective, how dangerous are skate blade injuries in hockey?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we've seen from this incident, but we just know from the nature of the blade itself, the amount of damage it can create. The injuries can be extensive, not only to other players, but to yourself. And so I think that's one of the things that, as you're teaching young athletes any sport, no matter what it is, the dangers associated with it. I remember when I was learning to play junior golf, one of the first things they did for us kids, we're like 7, 8, 10, they take you out and they put a watermelon on a tee or on the ground, and they take a golf club to it and show you, like, this is why you have to pay attention and be careful of what's around you, because bad things can happen if you don't do it. So I think as far as skate blades go, this is something that we're aware of, and we've got to be careful about it.
Pretgrave, he was arrested for manslaughter and had his bail extended 8 times over 18 months. He did some crowdfunding. He lost his visa through courts. Is there any, because it was a fluke, is there any avenue for him to recoup some of what he lost with wages? And I'm sure that there's an element of his reputation that was damaged, even though it was fluke.
Yeah, look, I'm not certain exactly on how it would work there, but here in America, if you were it not just wrongfully convicted or charged, you have to prove that it was a malicious prosecution, or your civil liberties were violated in some other way unreasonably, then you can sue the police agency that caused that harm, that resulted in your liberties being taken away, your work, your visa, et cetera, being pulled, and then ultimately try to pursue those damages, those losses that you sustained as a result. But I'm not sure if he would be able to.
Thanks for this. Appreciate it. And I also thank you for putting the warthog in my head. I will not be able to shake that loose for at least a couple of days. Pumbaa, right?
Yep. Timon and Pumbaa. So Hakuna Matata, my friends.
Hakuna Matata, Ashley Watkins from salmonashlaw.com. If you're in a crash, give them a call. It's salmonashlaw.com.
If you're injured in a crash, call Sam and Ash at 702-303-0333.